Good evening, folks, and a hearty welcome to our drive-in theater. We have a wonderful evening's entertainment lined up for you.
One that will provide several hours of pleasurable relaxation.
Washington, London, Paris, Moscow are key targets. The whole world is under attack.
Who built it? The Russians? The Chinese? Martians? Canadians? I don't care! All I know is we didn't build it, and that's reason enough to assume the worst and blow up the kingdom come.
For 100,000 years, it was buried in the snow and ice. Now it has found a place to live. Inside, where no one can see it.
Soldiers and their weapons would be powerless before the onslaught of the beast. The beast. The beast. The beast from 20,000 fathoms.
Guns, tanks, bombs. They're like toys against them.
It's indestructible. It's indescribable. Nothing can stop it. The nation and then the world could fall before the blood-curdling threat of...
Sci-Fi Double Feature Drive-In Podcast.
And gentlemen, Godzillas and Mothras, aliens and predators. Welcome to Sci-Fi Double Feature Drive-In Podcast.
Ooh, yeah.
Welcome. So I am your conspiracy-loving host, Elisa Weglin, and sitting next to me is my radioactive partner in grime, Jarrett, the Kaiju Man Weglin.
Hello there.
Hi. I thought you were going to say something.
No.
We end our double feature of Books on Film with a mighty metal munching monster, the Iron Giant.
I am Groot. Oh, wait, no, that's a different
one. That's a wrong movie, babe.
Oh, sorry, I watched
Same
the wrong one.
Same character, wrong movie.
Oh, okay, yeah, sorry.
Same actor, same character.
Yeah, well, same character.
Well, I mean...
Similar.
Similar character.
Similar vocabulary, anyways.
Well, he speaks 53 words.
Yeah.
Groot
yeah.
speaks three.
Four. We. He has we.
Oh, you got me there. You got me there. So let's kick this off with a little history on The Iron Giant.
Yeah, it's a great movie. I love it.
Love this movie.
It's like a monster movie, but animated.
Oh, yeah, we should talk about how we feel about this movie before we jump into things.
Well, as we haven't really talked... Well, we've talked about movies we've hated, so I shouldn't say that. but I do love this movie a lot.
Yes, this movie is wonderful. Definitely something that I really remember from my childhood. Like, this was one of my favorite movies, along with, like, The Brave Little Toaster, Fern Gully, Anastasia.
Land Before Time.
Yeah. These were, like, the movies besides Disney. Obviously, Disney is a huge part of, like, any kid's life.
Yeah, I actually liked these a little more than Disney.
Yeah.
But I just thought the animation was a little more detailed, a little more edgy, a little more
yeah.
fun to look at for me. I don't know.
I really like the animation in this.
Yeah.
The animation in this is great. But, yeah, I mean, the story in this is way different from than a Disney movie.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the ending is fucking depressing.
Yeah.
But, yes. Great movie. Excellent movie. Would watch again.
Oh, yes. Watch it all the time.
All right. So, now let's jump into the history.
Okay.
So, this film was originally supposed to be made into a movie musical
yeah.
in 1994 with The Who's Pete Townsend,
mm-hmm.
who had adapted the book into a stage musical in 1989 called Iron Man, a Musical.
He'd done a couple musicals before, Tommy and Quadrophenia, so...
Yeah, I mean, everyone knows about Tommy. That's,
yeah.
like, the most famous Who musical.
Yeah, so he definitely would be a man to give it to.
Yeah. So in 1991, Richard Baisley, who later became the film's lead animator, pitched a version of The Iron Man to Don Bluth, who worked at his studio in Ireland. He created a story outline and character designs, but Bluth passed on the project. After a stage musical was mounted in London, Des McAnuff, who had adapted Tommy with Townsend for the stage, believed that the Iron Man could translate to the screen, and the project was ultimately acquired by Warner Brothers Entertainment.
Speaking of Don Bluth, yeah, we were just talking about Anastasia and Land Before Time and
Yeah.
An American Tale.
Who more perfect to take on this movie?
I think the animation style would work for Iron Giant, but I don't think the Iron Giant would work with a song and dance number like a lot of those movies have.
Yeah. For some reason, like, bleak nuclear destruction yeah. doesn't scream, sing a song.
And, like, retro 50s military-industrial complex doesn't really fit that either.
No. Although, I couldn't imagine, like, the robot singing a song.
Although they did fit in the American Tale is about the second Jewish exodus out of Russia, so...
What?
Yeah, it's about Jewish people leaving Russia.
What are all these depressing-ass children's movies from our childhood?
Yeah. It's about them coming to Ellis Island.
Oh my gosh, and then, like, Anastasia is about the murder of, like, the Russian oligarchy.
Yeah, yeah. They're great movies. And then...
Fern Gully's about, like, pollution murdering shit.
And luckily, Land Before Time is just about murdering someone's mother.
Yeah. And then being an orphan.
And the end of the world.
Yeah. So, our childhood was great. Oh, and Brave Little Toaster was, like, a way more depressing Toy Story.
Yeah, exactly. The death of all of our appliances and the wastefulness of mankind.
Yeah, and they wonder why we're depressed. In our late 20s, yeah. We grew up with these movies.
We love our appliances like
our appliances.
Beings.
They were following him. They loved him. His heated blanket.
Our vacuum has a face. It may be grumpy, but we love it.
Oh my gosh. So, in 1996, Bird was added to the project.
Brad Bird.
Given a huge amount of creative control... And he tossed out the old ideas, including the musical aspect, which Pete could give less than a shit about, saying, well, whatever, I got paid.
Yes, and this is Brad Bird, and we will talk about Brad Bird a little later, and he's a heavy hitter. He's a heavy hitter in animation and now film.
Yeah, he's an amazing part of animation history.
Yeah, he started in Disney. He was had a little bit of disagreement with Disney. So he left Disney for a while, and now he's a heavy hitter again at Disney.
Yeah.
kind of a weird story, but we'll get back to him.
Yeah, we'll be right back to that. Unfortunately, Ted Hughes, who was the writer of
the original book,
he died before the movie was released. But his daughter attended the premiere and loved it. Pete loved it, too.
But Ted did get to hear a little bit about, he did get to read a little bit of the screenplay, apparently. So.
Yeah, later on I have a... quote from yeah. him on that.
Yeah, so.
So, but actually Hughes, or Hogarth Hughes, that's a tribute to Ted.
Yeah, yeah, he put his name in there. Mm. That's kind of nice.
A little naughty nod.
Naughty nod.
So, let's dive right into the plot.
This plot, this story, at least the film, is a nice... 1950s monster movie enveloped in a late 1990s animated movie.
Yes, it's layering on layering of things that we like.
Yeah, and it's got that really cool 1950s aesthetic with that B-movie look to it with the military rolling in and, of course, that Cold War feel to it. I love that. That's one of my favorite feels in a monster movie.
Yeah, I like the Cold War atomic monster movie.
Yeah, yeah. Even though the monster is not created by us, it's definitely affected by the Cold War in this, which is really cool.
Yes, and as most of the movies we talk about on here, it starts... Where, Jarrett?
I'm thinking on a boat.
It starts on a boat in the ocean.
So it's starting like a kaiju movie.
It's starting like a kaiju movie. And then here comes the robot out of the sky into the ocean.
It's kind of a cool way, the way they reveal him, because there's a boat. He's lost at sea in a storm. And he's kind of looking for the lighthouse, and he sees these lights turning around. He's like, oh, okay, I found the lighthouse.
Mm-hmm.
It actually turns out to be two lights peering down at this guy, so he knows something's up. It's not a regular lighthouse, so he's kind of freaked out. And he ends up crashing into this thing, basically crashing into a wall. So his ship starts to go down, and he actually ends up being saved, right? He ends up being saved. He ends up at the lighthouse. So pretty much his story could almost be bullshit. It's kind of...
Well, people think he's a kook. Yeah. Well, people think he's crazy.
He's obviously... he's established as a kook pretty quickly, but this can pretty much solidify that he's a kook. Like, oh, he just saw that. He ended up at the lighthouse. This was just a lighthouse.
Yeah. And so we get introduced to the main boy of the story.
One of the coolest names or weirdest names.
I've never heard Hogarth before. Like
Hogarth, yeah, I don't understand.
I didn't even know that was a name. It's not even a word.
Yeah, I've only heard it in this movie before, that's for sure.
So
Hogarth Hughes.
Hogarth Hughes. And
it's a sprightly young boy.
Creepy way to put it.
Yeah, I guess
he's
so.
He's a little boy. And
that's creepy too.
And he's got quite an imagination, we learn early on.
Yeah, he loves monster movies and
We learn like right away. They establish him like pretty well.
Yeah.
He loves monster movies. He's very imaginative. Disobeys his mom. But his mom, you can tell, is like, oh, you. Like, she's not crazy strict or anything.
Yeah, I know.
And he brings like a squirrel into
the
mom's
diner.
Work.
Yeah. So that wreaks havoc.
And that's where he meets Dean.
Dean is the owner of a scrapyard, which he likes to make it be known that he makes art there. It's not just a scrapyard.
Yeah, he's like the 50s beatnik.
He's a beatnik for sure.
He's a beatnik.
If they move this 10 years up, he would be the hippie.
Yeah. But so... When they meet, and then this is also when we see like the kook, the crazy.
Yeah, he's
alien
explaining
man.
He's explaining his story to his fellow fishermen, I believe.
Yeah, and Dean like sticks up for him.
Yeah,
which establishes like, oh, this guy's chill.
Yeah, he says one of the lines that I really like from the movie. If someone does, what does he say? If we don't stand up for the kooks, who else will? Or something like that. I love that
line.
That's
good.
I really like that line.
But, I mean, I think this establishes, this is the guy for Hogarth to go to. Like,
we're definitely establishing that. He's going to be a key character.
Yeah.
And he's like one of the more sympathetic characters right off bat.
Yeah. So this is when, Hogarth goes home and watches those scary monster movies, even though mom said no.
Yeah, you gotta be in bed by 9 or whatever.
What kid does that when no one's watching?
Oh, yeah.
No kid.
Especially with his dad being gone, which I think his dad's dead because you see a picture of a soldier by his alarm clock. So.
Yeah, he was a World War II pilot.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's who he's supposed to be.
Yeah. So that's why he has like the helmet.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, he hears a noise upstairs.
Okay. Yes.
And that is.
And the TV goes out.
Yeah.
So he's.
Well, he hears a noise upstairs, and then he gets distracted by the good part's coming up in the movie. But we learn the noise was the antennas getting eaten.
Yes.
So he goes up on the roof and. Antenna's gone. Bam. There's like this big trail of knocked over shit into the woods.
It's hard to miss, which I'm not sure how this thing gets around with not being seen yet.
Yeah. So, of course, Hogarth being a young boy is like, I need to go find out what that is. regardless of if this thing is a murdering psychopath.
Yeah, he has no concern for that. It's just all curiosity at this point.
And he just grabs a BB gun like it's going to defend him.
And he wraps, he tapes a flashlight to the BB gun like a tactical assault rifle.
Mm-hmm. It's really,
so he tracks the giant down. Well, he doesn't know it's a giant, but he tracks it down to the power station, basically.
Yeah. And he sees the giant eating the metal of the power station. Mm-hmm. But then giant robot don't know how things work on Earth. And he grabs the things that create electricity and gets zapped.
Mm-hmm.
But Hogarth, with his big old heart, saves the giant.
Yeah, he's about to run away and giant's getting electrocuted. And he turns around and turns electricity off for him. And the giant does not forget this.
No, he doesn't. And so Hogarth, when the giant falls over and like passes out. Yeah. So Hogarth goes and throws a rock in his mouth, like you do when there's a giant killer robot passed out. So robot comes back to life and Hogarth goes running, screaming into the woods and his mom shows up to save him.
Yeah. So, she noticed that he wasn't home.
Yeah. She came back and was like, no.
Why would you do that? So after that, we progress to the next day and we see Hogarth is in school. And we push the Cold War aesthetic a little farther with one of those duck and cover videos that they used to that they used to push on kids back then. That good old placebo effect.
Yeah, when you get incinerated, make sure you're ducking and covering.
At least it made him feel safe, I guess. I wouldn't feel safe.
Yeah. But he can't stop thinking about his new robot boyfriend, and he's drawing pictures of him.
Yeah.
I miss you.
No.
So after school, he, like, takes his camera.
And a piece of big tin siding. Yeah. Or aluminum siding is what I guess is what it's called.
And he goes and like sets it on a log.
Yeah.
And he's like waiting to take a picture.
Hours. For
hours. Hours. Although the sun doesn't move.
Yeah, yeah.
It just seems like it gets bored really fast.
Yeah, it might just be a couple minutes.
And then he wakes up. And the medal's gone.
Yeah, his trap failed. Because he's bored. Failed.
And so the Iron Giant's there.
Yeah, he's just looking at him.
Just staring at him. And he like drops the medal, or the medal's next to him.
Yeah, he like gives it back to him.
Yeah. And Hogarth freaks the fuck out and starts running away. It's like, dude, you baited him. Yeah. Why are you freaking out?
And then the Iron Giant just, without any effort, just follows him.
Yeah, with like a dead face. Just like...
You know, a human can run with all their effort and he just has to take a few steps to catch up.
That's yeah, just slowly walking behind him and he's like, ah! So Hogarth falls down and the Iron Giant catches up and they have a confrontation and Hogarth realizes he's a friendly giant.
Yeah.
And the giant drops the on-off switch.
Oh, yes, signal that he realized that he saved him.
Yes. And so Hogarth's like, oh, man, we're best friends now.
Yeah.
So it starts to get dark, and Hogarth has to go home. So he's like, you got to stay here in the woods. But the Iron Giant doesn't understand that.
No.
He's a robot.
Yes.
From space. So he's like, I'm going to follow you because I love you. And
he puts him up in the barn, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no. At first, he tries to eat the train track.
Oh, yes.
And the train hits him and he explodes.
Yeah. He kind of just, all of his pieces kind of just come apart.
Yes.
He's kind of designed to explode, it seems, to minimize damage almost.
Well, like, it's designed, like, if he has any damage, he can put himself back together.
Yeah, yeah.
So, he'll never die. But this is around the time that the agent from the government comes.
Yeah, he starts interviewing people at the logging company, and people are having their equipment having bite marks taken out of it. And even the guy from the government, his car has a bite mark out of it, and then it just disappears.
Yeah.
Like, he looks away for a second, and his car disappears. So he's going around town, and he eventually finds Hogarth's BB gun at the scene where all the evidence is with the Iron Giant.
Yeah.
And
then when the train accident happens, he shows up at the train accident, but luckily, Hogarth's already hidden the giant in his barn.
Yes.
And so Hogarth and his mother are having dinner.
They live right down the hill from where the train accident happened, yes, by the way.
So the agent, he needs to use a phone. And so he goes to Hogarth's house where the Iron Giant is. And he's like, oh, your mom's sexy. Let me use your phone. And Hogarth's like, get out of my house.
And we notice that the Iron Giant has not actually put himself all back together yet. His hand is walking through the house, creating some comedic situations.
Watching TV, even though it has no eyes.
Yeah, it's walking behind his mom's back and she doesn't notice, you know, some of those like classic British kind of comedy situations.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the government agent showing up with a giant hand in the house is not a good situation either. So he's trying to hide the hand while this agent is on the phone and all this crazy stuff is happening. The hand finally makes its way to the barn and attaches itself to the giant, but the...
Well, after falling out of the bathroom window
yeah,
while Hogarth's pretending to take a shit.
He didn't exactly do this gracefully, that's right.
Yeah, and then the agent creepily opens the bathroom door while he has his pants down. It's a fucking... That scene. Hoo-wee.
Ooh. And then the agent gets his business done, uses the phone, and starts to leave, but then he notices the BB gun in his car. And he's like, it says Hogarth on the gun. Well, mostly. It says Hoga.
Hoga who?
But who's elf? Who? What other name is Hoga? Except for Hulk Hogan or something.
So yeah, he goes back inside and he's like, "Here's your gun. Do you see any robot?" he doesn't know it's a robot, but he's like, "Do you see anything?"
Oh no.
He's like, "No." And then the mom gives him away, and she's like, "He wouldn't stop talking about a robot." And it's like, "Damn it, mom! Shut the fuck up."
But then, the next day, his mom rents this guy a room.
Because he wants to bother Hogarth like a creep. Like a creep would. You know, like a creep would rent a room to bother like a 10-year-old boy.
Yeah, he's the government. This is a great movie for people of our age to be taught to stop trusting the government. It's a good... at this age, I was about 12. So, I mean, I was a little old to start being taught this. You should start teaching kids around 7 or 8 to stop trusting the government.
I was 8.
Yeah, okay.
So I stopped trusting the government.
That's good. We should teach kids to not trust the government at 7 or 8. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't trust the government, children.
Yeah, that's why you should listen to our Driving Underground episodes.
Yeah.
So then Hogarth and the agent go to a diner and they talk a little bit more about this iron giant that they are investigating.
But then Hogarth makes him shit his pants. So he can escape because he's like, "I don't want to hang out with this old fogey."
Hogarth does the old X-lax in the ice cream trick.
Oh, Hogarth, you sneaky bastard.
And Hogarth finally realizes that it's not safe for the giant to be in the barn, and he needs to set him up somewhere else.
Yeah, he takes him. He's trying to find a place for him, and he sees like a broken down car. And he's like, "I guess you can eat that."
Yeah,
it's been there for a while.
Because he eats metal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we said that. He eats metal.
He eats metal.
Yeah,
that's all he eats. He doesn't eat like metal and pie. He eats metal.
Yeah.
So. He's going to eat this car, and then here comes Dean, going to tow it to
He tows it to his scrapyard.
Yeah. So then Hogarth, like, "I'm brilliant. We're going to take you to the scrapyard."
Yeah, it's a buffet.
It's a buffet. Endless buffet. So they get to the scrapyard, and Dean's like, "What up? What are you doing here?" And they have a nice long talk about being a kid.
And Dean, being the cool younger adult in the town, he's cool with it. After a little bit of convincing, a lot less than you would think, he's cool with it.
Yeah. So after he gives the man the poops, he goes to go see his robot friend at the junkyard. And, of course, Iron Giant's giving Dean a hard time.
Yeah, he's going crazy.
Eating all his art.
Mischievous. And he's like, "That's not art. That you eat the scrap. That's art."
Oh, crazy. Yeah, I'm going to get you.
I'm going to get you. You could smash me, though.
So they're playing. They're messing around. They go to the lake. They have a good time.
Yeah, they do cannonballs. You know, the old cannonball trick.
Yeah. So then the secret agent man.
Yeah, secret agent man.
He finds Hogarth's camera in the woods while he's going around questioning people like a sneaky bastard.
Yeah, sneaky government.
Sneaky government. Why don't you just
let
man.
Us live? Let us live and have our giant robot man.
Yeah, get he's not here. Doing anything to hurt anybody, yeah. You asshole.
We're paying our taxes. Let us have our giant robot man.
So he gets the camera, and then, like, a fucking creep develops the film.
Yeah.
He's looking at pictures of a little boy having a birthday party, and then he finally gets the one he needs of a robot.
Yeah, it's Hogarth and the robot, so he has the evidence that he needs to bring in the big guns.
Yeah.
He has the story, because he's been given these shit assignments, basically. So finally, he has this big assignment, this big evidence he could bring in the military.
So when Hogarth gets home from having a good day with his robot friend,
yeah,
he...
Nice lake day.
So this evil man, he's like questioning him now in the barn, and he's like, where's the robot? Or I'm going to take you away from your mom, because I'm the government.
He's like, he's doing CIA techniques on this kid. And the CIA is
like
new.
Boy, on this 10-year-old fucking boy, he's like, I'm gonna have your mom, you know, government eyes take you away. And
government eyes.
And then he chloroforms Hogarth after he gets where the Iron Giant is out of him.
Yeah, because he pretty much just wakes up in his bed, right?
He puts a cloth over his mouth, and then Hogarth passes out, clearly chloroform.
Yeah.
And then Hogarth wakes up in his bed hearing Agent Man calling the government, being like, get your army down here.
He Casey Anthony'd Hogarth.
He did. But Hogarth lived.
Chloroform, more like boroform.
Oh, good one.
So the tanks are coming in. We got jeeps. We got tanks.
Well, they're not there yet.
But they're coming.
So Hogarth, he's got to get to the Iron Giant. He's got to warn him.
Yeah, he's got to get him out of there.
So but he can't leave because the agent man's there.
Yeah.
So they're faking each other out. They're just staring at each other across the hall.
Yeah.
While Hogarth's in bed, because this man is so creepy, staring at a little boy in bed. He chloroforms him, and then he puts him in bed and stares at him.
And you know, it's the 50s, so it's like, what, 20 years till text messaging?
Yeah. So Hogarth finally escapes when Agent Man closes his eyes.
The old pillows under the blankets trick.
So he goes and he warns Iron Giant and Dean. And so when the military comes, the Iron Giant's, he's just pretending to be a work of art.
Yep, Dean dresses him up like a piece of crappy beatnik art.
Yeah. So then the military man's like, government man, you're fired.
Yeah, we're pissed you brought us out here for this shit.
Which I don't think military man can fire government man, but whatever.
Yeah, I think they are on separate things, but whatever. It's
government's
government in my eyes. You can get the fuck out.
Get out of my country.
Get out of here, even though you're employed by the country. Get out.
Get out. So, military is going to leave. They're pissed. They're pissed at this man. So, Hogarth and the giant are playing around, having a mess around. And Hogarth points a fake gun at the Iron Giant.
Yeah, his little ray gun.
And it triggers a defense mechanism in the Iron Giant, and almost he shoots lasers.
Yeah, almost like a Manchurian Candidate situation. He just kind of turns on his defensive guns. He just goes automatically, almost wants to kill Hogarth right there.
But Hogarth, like, the Iron Giant doesn't even know what's happening.
No.
And so everybody freaks out. Dean freaks out. And he's like, you almost did that. And points to like the hole where the lasers went through. He's like, you almost did that to Hogarth. The
Iron Giant is broken up about it. He's so sad.
He's like,
I'm not a gun.
I not do that. No. So he runs away.
I'm not a gun.
Yeah, I'm not a gun. Because Hogarth's been telling him, like, all this shit about him having a soul and all this stuff.
Yeah.
So he's, like, all existential now. So he runs away, and he sees two boys falling out of a building and saves them. So now the whole town knows about the Iron Giant.
Yeah.
Not a good time when the military's still in town.
But at least when they do find out about him, it's good publicity.
Yeah. So government man is like, Oh, there he is. And the military.
He's over there.
Yeah. So they run over about the same time Hogarth gets over there.
Of course, they shoot first, ask questions later.
Yeah. So
almost killing Hogarth.
Yeah. And then when this whole thing's going on, the Dean's telling the government man, like, hey, he's got the kid.
Yeah.
Knock it off. Yeah. Don't be shooting him. Like, he only reacts in defense. So the government man's like, oh, okay. And goes to military man's like, he killed a kid.
Yeah,
we gotta
he killed the kid.
He's running around trying to not look at what's happening because looks.
Yeah, he doesn't want to be triggered by
the guns. So then he gets knocked off a cliff. And
With Hogarth in his hand still.
Yeah. Because he's carrying around Hogarth trying to protect him.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden his flight mechanisms are triggered. And he's like, you can fly. Fly like you Superman.
You can fly. You can fly. I love that part.
So he's flying around like Superman. And then he gets knocked out of the sky with a missile.
Yeah, they have a little bit of a dogfight, which is a great sequence, by the way, of animation. I think that they explain, like, all of it. He doesn't know his abilities is, like, because he got that bump on his head. He got hit in the head.
Yeah.
That's why he doesn't know what he is. And that's why he doesn't know where he comes from or what he is for or what his purpose is. Because there's a deleted scene where he sees that he is from a race of robots that go and kill people, kill planets of people.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a deleted scene where he knocked his head, and so he doesn't know that he is a killer robot. So he develops he develops this friendship with Hogarth, which is kind of a cool thing, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when he gets knocked out of the sky, he falls, and he's trying to protect Hogarth, but Hogarth falls out of his hand.
Yeah.
And Hogarth only got knocked out, but the Iron Giant doesn't understand, and since he's not moving, he thinks that he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of loses his shit, and the bump on his head pops out.
Yeah.
And so he just goes into full weapon mode.
Yeah.
Like, and these things, like, all come out of him.
His arms turn into, like, battle cannons and...
Yeah. And he starts shooting everything, and then he has these, like, weapons come out of, like, his head area, and it looks very reminiscent of War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
And so he's, like, destroying everything because he's, like, so distraught that they killed Hogarth. And so, finally, when Hogarth comes back to life, well, he just wakes up.
Yeah, he just wakes up.
By this point, the military has decided they're going to launch a nuclear weapon.
Yeah, they go straight to nuke, just like War of the Worlds.
Yeah. So Hogarth goes to, like, calm him down. And after they calm him down, government man is still like, I want to nuke it.
Yeah.
Even though everyone else has decided this is okay, this is fine. So government man makes a stupid and grabs the walkie-talkie away from military man and is like, nuke it, do it. And the guy's like, hey, you know that they're going to nuke the robot that's standing right there.
Yeah, they're standing right where the nuke's going to hit.
Yeah. So government man's like, well, I'm getting out of here. And the Iron Giant stops him.
Yeah, he tries to get in a Jeep and he stomps on a Jeep, right?
Yeah, he just puts out his hand so he can run into it. So the nuke's coming. Everyone's very sad because everyone's about to die.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when everyone's like, shouldn't we go to a shelter? And everyone's like, no, that's not really going to help. So everyone knows that all that's bullshit.
So we kind of know where this story's going to go from here.
Yeah. The Iron Giant knows what he must do.
Mm-hmm.
Because Hogarth goes, when that missile comes down, it's going to kill us all.
Mm-hmm.
So the Iron Giant flies up into space, because it's one of those nuclear missiles that goes up into space and then falls down.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes up into space, and right before he's going to hit the nuclear missile, he goes, Superman. And it goes, and Hogarth's so sad.
Yeah.
And he receives a bolt from the Iron Giant.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the only piece of him that the government says is left.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, Dean and his mom are dating.
Yeah, hachimachi.
Yeah, get it on. And they built a beautiful statue of him in the park.
Yeah, they honor the giant.
Yeah.
And we think that That's all we're going to see of the giant. But then...
No.
The bolt starts to move. And beep. It flies out
beep.
Of beep. Hogarth's room and rolls down through the prairie.
Well, it's really cute because Hogarth goes, "See you soon." And then the bolt rolls away.
It rolls all the way to the glaciers in the northern ice caps.
In Iceland.
In Iceland, yeah. And that there is the Iron Giant putting himself together.
And the last shot is his head in the snow. And he smiles. Yeah. And it's so cute.
Yeah,
I love it.
He's indestructible, but his pieces were just spread about the earth.
Seriously, it's like such a powerful ending.
Yeah.
And then like that very last part is very heartwarming.
Yeah, I love it. It's so good.
It's not like the usual cop-out of like, we have to make it happy. It's like...
No. He's not there, like, giving a high five to Hogarth.
No!
But, you know, he might do it someday.
It's a really good movie. Seriously, definitely in my top from my childhood.
Yeah.
Shaped my world.
Even if you don't like animation, if you like B-movies, I think you would like this movie.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't the typical, like, childhood animation movie. This is... like a very touching, real story.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go on to the differences. Since this is for the books on film, this is the differences between the book and the film.
Yeah, first of all, the book is called The Iron Man at first, and they changed it to The Iron Giant because, you know, Iron Man is popular here in America because he's a comic book character. But the book's original title was The Iron Man, A Children's Story in Five Nights.
Yes. And it was published in 1968, and it was written by Ted Hughes.
Yep.
Bird pretty much tossed out the book and turned the whole thing into a personal mission.
Yeah, Brad Bird changed a lot of the original book for this movie. He took a lot of the stuff from the stage play, though, I think.
He took some of it, but he pretty much created his own story around what he felt was the story that needed to be told at the time.
Yeah, he definitely inserted a lot of his own stuff.
Yeah, a key element in the production of this movie, and what led to the "What if a gun had a soul" theme, is that Brad Bird himself had been greatly affected by gun violence, for his sister had been shot and killed by her husband.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really interesting to think about when you... give a gun a voice or a soul or an existential crisis like this.
And I think it's really actually crazy that we're addressing this movie right now when gun violence is really brought to the forefront of the conversation.
Yeah.
At this time.
You don't really normally ask a gun what they think about it. It's like, oh, I don't really want to be doing this.
Yeah, I don't want to be killing anybody.
Yeah, so it's really interesting when they, the Iron Giant's like, I'm not a gun. I don't, like, he doesn't like killing or anything like that.
He's really sad about it.
Yeah, it's really an interesting theme to put forth, I think.
Mm-hmm. In the director's cut of the film, where we get a dream sequence of Iron Giant being a part of a metal army that lays waste to the alien world. So that's what you were talking about.
Yeah, I think that would be... We didn't watch the director's cut, but I think that would be a really interesting deleted scene to watch.
Yeah, I heard that the director's cut has, like, 2 more minutes and, like, 2 extra scenes.
Mm.
So that would be one of them. I don't know. I don't remember what the other one is. So none of this is in the book. The book opens with the Iron Man standing at a seaside cliff where we learn that he can rebuild himself if he is broken apart. But the reader learns nothing about his origins. He could have been built by a mad scientist or a bigger robot. Who knows? But his origin was not important to the Ted Hughes version, which kind of transferred over to this because Brad Bird didn't want to focus too much on the origin story of the Iron Giant because he wanted to focus on the story between Hogarth and the Iron Giant.
Mm-hmm. And really the antagonist is not from his origins. It's really what's on Earth and what's in front of him. You know, the military and the government and all that.
Yeah. Really, like, without this deleted scene, all we get of his origin story is in the beginning we see like a streak across the sky.
Mm-hmm. It's actually, I read a little bit about what's the book. The book talks a little bit about not so much his origins, but the whole military and Cold War subplot is not in the book. He has to fight a sky or space dragon or something like that. Yeah, it's big enough to cover Australia or something. And also Hogarth is not really nice to the giant. Like he
really?
When he sees the giant, he immediately runs to town and says we have to fight him.
Oh my god.
Yes, and so it's there are other differences than we've said so far, but yeah, and Hogarth has a dad, not a mom. Mm-hmm. The dad believes Hogarth right away that there's a giant. Like that's usually not something that people believe.
Yeah, they're right like away. Dumb kid talking yeah. about blah blah blah.
Yeah, so the giant still sacrifices himself for the humans in the book, but it's to save him from that sky dragon thing. So it's really, even though it's a lot different, Ted Hughes did say he liked the Cold War angle. So it's a lot different when you think about it.
That is a lot different. So the Iron Giant being able to slowly come back together after being smashed to pieces is about the only character trait that Brad Bird took from the book. There is a sequel called The Iron Woman. It is about an Iron Woman, go figure.
I know, right?
That comes down to punish all of what mankind has done to Earth, including polluting the seas, rivers, and lakes. She exacts her revenge on mankind.
Both of these movies kind of play, well, not both these movies. Iron Woman is not a movie, but they kind of both, the movie and The Iron Woman kind of both play on similar themes as kaiju movies, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the Iron Giant with the
anti-nuclear
stance, and then the anti-pollution stance with the Iron Woman thing. So
that's pretty cool.
I think it's a cool parallel there.
Love everything that has parallels to kaiju. So moving on to production.
Yeah, Brad Bird, the director.
Yes.
I'm a big Brad Bird fan.
Brad Bird, Big Bird.
He started off at Disney. He was mm-hmm. animating on Fox and the Hound. He's had a long career. He directed some Simpsons episodes. He animated for the Rugrats. He was an executive consultant on The Simpsons, The Critic, and King of the Hill for many years, like over 8 years on The Simpsons.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, he went on to write and direct Ratatouille and The Incredibles. So he went back to Disney, even though he had some differences with them in the beginning. And, of course, and then after that, he went on to out of animation, and he directed Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, one of my favorites of the series.
What an upgrade.
I really liked that one. It was really cool to see an animation director do a really cool action movie. So see that. A huge blockbuster movie that nobody has seen.
Brad Bird, when he got this movie, Warner Brothers had just taken a pretty big hit with the animation picture they had just released.
Yeah.
So this was kind of like a gamble for them.
Yeah, they're really like, this one better be okay.
So Brad Bird commented, they did leave us alone if we kept it in control and showed them we were producing the film responsibly and getting it done on time and doing stuff that was good. Bird regarded the trade-off as having one-third of the money of a Disney or DreamWorks film and half of the production schedule. So I'm sure that he liked it, having more control.
Oh, yeah.
But, that's less money. That's very
important. Especially with some of the changes that we'll talk about that they wanted to make.
Yeah. So when writing the screenplay, Bird was unhappy to have another writer, Tim McCanley's, on board. He eventually came to like him when reading his other work. When developing the screenplay, Bird sent a script to Tad Hughes, the writer of the original book. Hughes said, I want to tell you how much I like what Brad Bird has done. He's made something all of a piece, with terrific sinister gathering momentum, and the ending came to me in a glorious piece of amazement. He's made a terrific dramatic situation out of the way he's developed the Iron Giant. I can't stop thinking about it.
That's a terrific compliment, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if I was, changing someone's book completely and making it into a movie, and I sent him the script, and he was like, wow, what a masterpiece.
I'd be like, yeah.
I must be pretty damn good.
Oh, wow, thank you, sir. Thank
you. So the animation in this movie, since it's animation instead of special effects in this one, first animated movie we're taking on, the animation is very interesting in this movie. It's the first movie where the lead character was digitally animated while the rest of it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So the animators studied Chuck Jones, Hank Ketchum, Al Hirschfeld, and Disney films from that era, such as 101 Dalmatians, for inspiration in the film's animation. They also studied the art of Norman Rockwell.
I really saw the 101 Dalmatians influence on that.
Yeah, like the style is very similar, like the shapes and everything.
Yeah, they're especially in the faces, the facial structure, the long chins and the big noses.
Mm-hmm.
And also in that era of Disney movies, like the backgrounds are super detailed, and then the characters pop. Their characters, the colors in the characters are really saturated, and they just play about in these super detailed backgrounds.
Yeah, and like the colors are very, very distinct from that period of time in animation.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite Disney movies is 101 Dalmatians because of the details. And one of those things that we've lost in animation, I think, is that those detailed backgrounds.
Well, we've also lost people drawing by hand for the most part.
Well, yeah.
So, The Giant was designed by filmmaker Joe Johnston, best known for being a designer on the Star Wars trilogy, its spin-offs, The Ewok Adventures, and eventually becoming a director himself of films like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids,
Yay.
The Lovable Jumanji,
Yay.
And the atrocious Jurassic Park 3.
Boo!
So, in order to better blend the computer-generated giant into the traditionally animated film, technicians came up with a program that gave the giant's lines a slight, quote-unquote, wobble in order to match the natural line imperfections found in hand-drawn animation.
Yeah, you can really notice that with the digital characters. They don't move like the hand-drawn characters do.
Well, I think they did a really good job blending.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
There's only a few times where you're like, oh, he looks digital. But for the most part, it's like, wow, they really did a great job like blending this.
They did a great job blending it because they actually tried to. Some projects don't. They're just really happy implementing the characters digitally because they like how clean it looks. But when you're combining mediums that way, I think it's really nice to make it blend that way with the wobble.
Yeah. I think it's just that extra step to making it look just really clean and nice.
Mm-hmm.
A part of the team took a trip to Maine. They went and photographed and videotaped five small cities. They wanted to make sure to accurately reflect its culture down to the minutiae. We shot storefronts, barns, forests, homes, home interiors, diners, every detail we could, including the bark on trees, said production designer Mark Whitting.
Yeah, I can really, really tell with that, like I said, with the backgrounds and everything besides the characters is really detailed. I mean, the characters are detailed, but...
But, like, you can tell, like, the town and...
The textures and...
Everything the is rust, so nice.
The rust on the metal is super detailed even.
The town that they created, or even if it's based off of a real town, I want to visit it because it's adorable. But the town that they have in the story, Rockwell, is so interesting.
That's the name of the town, Rockwell?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't even catch the name. It's named after Norman Rockwell then, probably. Yeah.
It's a nod to the artist that they kind of took inspiration from.
Oh, that's really cool.
And also kind of like a to Roswell.
That's cool.
Which the whole time we were watching it, every time they said Rockwell, I was like, Roswell? Roswell? The group would gather in a screening room to view completed sequences, with Bird offering suggestions by drawing onto the screen with a marker. Lead animator Baisley suggested that this led to a sense of camaraderie among the crew, who are unified in their mission to create a good film. Bird cited his favorite moment of the film's production as occurring in the editing room when the crew gathered to test a sequence in which the giant learns what a soul is.
That's probably my favorite scene in the movie as well.
Yeah. but people in the room were spontaneously crying. It was pivotal. There was an undeniable feeling that we were really tapping into something, he recalled.
I know you feel bad about the deer, but it's not your fault. Things die. It's part of life. It's bad to kill, but it's not bad to die.
Kill? Die?
Well, yes, someday.
I die?
I don't know. You're made of metal, but you have feelings, and you think about things. And that means you have a soul. And souls don't die.
Soul?
Mom says it's something inside of all good things. And that it goes on forever and ever.
Like, this sounds like a really great way to create a film. Like, it's no surprise that this was so well put together, and it seems like the team was, you know, really mm-hmm. on the same level.
Yeah, and with animation, you have to look at it over and over and make sure that it's looking right, and this doesn't have motion capture like today, so... To get a character like the Iron Giant that doesn't really have a face, per se, to create that kind of emotion is really, really astounding.
And they did it all with the jaw and the mm-hmm. eyes.
Yeah, exactly.
But I was reading that they did everything as far as, like, putting it together with, like, macro and After Effects. They did, like, mm-hmm. all the storyboarding with it. And... Brad Bird was so happy with it because he'd be able to, like, create the entire storyboard, mm-hmm. like, visually being able to see how everything would move in macro and After Effects.
They even assembled a lot of the scenes in After Effects. Mm-hmm. After Effects was a new program back then. Now you can get it on your home computer. But back then, he was just happy to be able to do it right there and not wait mm-hmm. for it to come back from, like, a post house or something.
Yeah, that was one of the reasons why, like, he could just put it up on the screen and, you know, draw on it with a marker showing what he wanted to change mm-hmm. is because they could just, like, you know, do it over and over and over again in a house.
Get the little tiny minutiae perfect.
Yeah, and I'm sure on a much cheaper budget than having to keep doing it over and over, like, in the production house. So Brad Bird, being a seasoned animator that he was... personally animated the scene where Hogarth rants to Dean about his problems in a super fast pace after Dean gives him espresso.
I'm pretty sure he just wanted to do that because it was fun. Because any animator would want to do that because there's just a lot of expression and movement in there.
Yeah, I just thought that was really funny when I found that fact. I was like, that's a good one to put
in. It's a good little sequence.
So Bird later recalled that he clashed with executives who wished to add characters.
Oh, Jesus, this pisses me off.
Executives, they always know what's best for a movie. So they wanted to add a sidekick dog, set the film in present day, and include a hip-hop soundtrack.
This is not Space Jam. I love Space Jam, but Space Jam is Space Jam. Yeah. You know?
This was due to concerns that the film was not merchandisable, which is exactly why you should make a movie. It's to sell merchandise, Jarrett.
Well, even back then, it's like, people complain nowadays, but back then, they were still trying to sell Happy Meal toys.
Star Wars changed its storyline so that characters would sell toys better, Jarrett.
That's true.
It's always been this bad. So, to which Bird responded, if they were interested in telling the story, they should let it be what it wants to be.
Yes.
The film was initially going to be released under the Warner Brothers Family Entertainment banner, the logo for which featured mascot Bugs Bunny in a tuxedo. Bird was against this for a multitude of reasons and eventually got confirmation that executives Bob Daley and Terry Semel agreed. Instead, Bird and his team developed another version of the logo to resemble the classic studio logo famously employed in Looney Tunes shorts.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this is the only place I've seen that logo.
Yeah, but it definitely makes it seem more professional.
Oh, yeah. It's
less childlike.
More dignified.
Yeah, because this isn't... I can't stress enough that this isn't like a children's movie.
No.
This feels just like a movie. Like, yeah. It's not like, oh... This only is for babies.
Yeah. It is rated PG at least.
So. It doesn't matter. Like, I don't think ratings matter on what audience it should be for.
But that's...
Except for, like, R-rated movies aren't for babies. Like, that is a thing.
But that's the first place people go to, is the rating. So, that's just how it is.
Yeah, like, but I'm not saying, like...
It's PG, so... But then Jaws is PG. But that was a different time.
Yeah. So the reception of this movie, was it good? Was it bad? What did the world think?
Critics loved it.
Of course they did.
But it was not marketed at all. So
thanks, Warner Brothers.
Yeah, thanks for not... I guess you can really only make a Happy Meal toy of the Iron Giant in so many different ways.
But there's other ways to market things besides toys.
I'm just saying that's how they think.
Yeah.
Critics really liked it. I mean, how can they not? It's a good story. It's animated well. It's not overbearing with songs that don't need to be there.
Yeah.
I'm sure that they were happy to see an animated movie that they didn't have to sing through.
Yeah. And audiences love the movie as well. The film earned an A grade from CinemaScore.
Yeah, and you know our old pal, Roger Ebert.
Oh, we always like to bring up when he's got something to say.
Yeah, and he actually have a positive review for this one.
You're kidding me. Roger Ebert?
3.5 stars out of 4.
Oh my God.
That's really good for him. And he said, like the new Japanese animated films, which I'm assuming he's talking about Studio Ghibli, those kind of movies, because those were pretty big at the time. I mean, they're still big, but they were really gaining steam at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like the new Japanese animated films, The Iron Giant is happy to be a real movie in everything but live action. There are no cute little animals. See, he's talking about that.
See, that's exactly what I was saying.
And not a single musical number. See? It's a story, plain and simple. The director, Brad Bird, is a Simpsons veteran whose visual look here, much more complex than The Simpsons, resembles the clear line technique of Japan's Hayao Miyazaki. It works as a lot of animation does, to make you forget from time to time that these are moving drawings, because the story and characters are so compelling.
Oh my gosh, that's such a nice thing for him to say.
I know, right?
He usually only has, like, dumb shit to say, like, about Gamera. Shut up, Roger Ebert, well, you dead asshole.
Did he like Gamera more than Godzilla 1985?
He liked one Godzilla movie, and I think that he liked... I think he liked a Gamera movie.
I think he liked Guardian of the Universe a little bit. Whatever.
He shits all over kaiju. So the box office numbers, unfortunately, did not reflect how well the movie did. Mostly due to the lack of marketing.
Yeah, you didn't believe in this, Warner Brothers.
Boo. The studio later did a 180 and gave it the marketing blitz it needed on home video instead.
That's where I saw it. Yep.
Got it on VHS. And the movie gathered a large cult following since then. Hello.
That's me.
Cult following here. Much of its following also comes from Cartoon Network, which used to run the film in an annual all-day marathon on Thanksgiving.
I used to watch it on there as well.
Hell yeah. So that is The Iron Giant.
Yeah, there's The Iron Giant.
We did it.
I am Groot.
I am Iron Giant.
I am Iron Giant.
Superman. Well... I definitely will always have a very warm place in my heart for this movie.
Oh, yeah.
I watched it when I was a child. I'll watch it when I'm old.
It's very watchable. Rewatchable. Very lovable. Very well made. Not even a bit hacky at all.
At all. If you don't like it, I don't like you.
Get out of here.
Get out of here.
You're probably one of those government agents.
You probably hate it because I said government man and military man.
Yeah, get out of here.
Get out of here.
So, yeah, that's The Iron Giant. We hope you liked our Books on Film Month.
Books on Film.
Bum, 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 bum,
books
bum.
On Film. So, yes. Thanks for tuning in.
Yeah.
We always like it when you do. We hope you do it again.
Yes. Next week, we will have another Drive-In Underground.
Who knows what we'll talk about.
Yeah. I have my topic picked. Do you have your topic picked?
I don't know. You're going to have to find out.
That means no. She has no topic picked.
Shut up. I'm still investigating, Jarrett.
She's very into her investigations.
I am. Oh. Well, thank you for joining us. We hope you join us again. We love you. You're pretty.
What are those addresses they need to know?
Well, you can always find us on that Patreon thing at... patreon.com/sfdfdipodcast. And of course, there's all those other things that we have at the end. And always a reminder, we do fuck tons of polls on Twitter.
Yeah,
so if you want to have a hand in what we talk about, what we do, who we are,
yeah,
then vote. Vote, 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 vote,
yeah,
vote
you
on
can...
Twitter.
Be in on that decision-making process.
Yeah.
For future episodes. So, yeah, we love you. And,
we love you.
We will.
And we'll see you
on the
other side. It's my line. Asshole. We'll see you on the other side.
All right. And
praise Godzilla. Praise Godzilla. Steal my line. I'll steal your line.
Praise Godzilla.
Praise Godzilla.
Praise Godzilla.
Praise him.
Praise him. He's an awesome Godzilla. Love you guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See what movie's playing next at Sci-Fi Double Feature Drive-In on Instagram, Facebook, and our website. Just add that.com. Catch us on Twitter at SFDFDIPodcast.
We sure hope you enjoyed the movie. Thank you for joining us. As always, we're glad to have you. Please replace your speaker, dispense of all trash, and watch for children as you carefully exit our theater. Good night.